Hello, football fans. Football season is here and expectations are high. This is Ronnie Bowling of Brentwood Hearing Center. Meeting your expectations of better hearing is always the goal of our doctors of audiology. From diagnosis to demonstration to providing you the most recent device technology, we're determined to exceed your expectations of a tailored hearing solution. Give us a call today at 615-377-0420 or learn more at BrentwoodHearingCenter.com. We hope to see you soon.
The top stories and the top insiders on Rocky Top. This is the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast with your host, Will Bowling.
This is episode number 10. It's the UT Podcast. And as always, it's the 104.5 The Zone Podcast Network. Glad you decided to join us in what is a big week for Tennessee fans. Wherever you may be listening, you've come to the right place. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. I'm your host, as always, Will Bowling. Hard to believe this is already episode number 10. And joining us, as he did in episode number one, Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel calls in from Knoxville. Mike, how's it going today, man?
Good. I like this pattern we've got going, too. Number one, number 10. I really look forward to being on episode 20.
Well, and also by the time you're there, maybe the Braves will have a World Series ring that we can talk about as well. Hopefully.
Now I'm getting all warm. Don't do
that. Well, of course, it is a big week for Tennessee, as I said here off the top. It always is when it's Florida. And it seems like fans have started to get excited, have started to, I wouldn't say throw away the first 3 weeks, but have at least tried to have a short memory, even though I don't think that's going to really help Tennessee this Saturday in the Swamp. As we look ahead to this matchup with Florida, though, let's start last Saturday with the matchup against Chattanooga. And I'll be quite honest here. Are there any real takeaways for this Tennessee team and for this fan base right now? Because I cannot remember a team in Neyland Stadium looking as bad as the Mocs did last Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to put stock in it in terms of performance, but I think it is really valuable for a team that needed a win to get it, but not just get the win, but handle business as you're supposed to. I mean, Tennessee was at least 45 points better than Chattanooga, and they came out there and showed it. And I think that's really important for a team that has to have something good happen, is to come out there and say, all right, we're this much better, we're going to win and handle this team because that's what we're supposed to do. And that's what Tennessee did. And, you know, if it was a 21-0 win, I think we're sitting here having a different conversation about the value of that. But, I mean, from an offensive standpoint, defense forcing turnovers, all those things, hard to know how much those mean, but just the intangible value of winning a game like you're supposed to, I think is huge.
Well, I think, too, that Jeremy Pruitt, I think, smartly took an opportunity to back his veteran quarterback in Jarrett Garantano on Saturday after the win against Chattanooga. And I thought this was smart, making the issue about the media creating a narrative. You and I both know that media members that cover this team day in and day out haven't really been calling for Jarrett Garantano's starting job, because I think people that follow this program closely know very well that there's not a better option on that sideline than either JT Schrout or Brian Maurer at the present moment. Why is it that we get so obsessed with the backup quarterbacks, even when we know nothing about them? I had a guy in my Twitter mentions comparing Brian Maurer and JT Schrout to Tua Tagovailoa in the BYU game. I mean, I think we need to take a step back and realize that not all backup quarterbacks can step into a national title like Tua did, and there's certainly not one of that caliber even close on Tennessee's entire sideline.
Yeah, you know, the backup quarterback is every fan base's favorite player.
That's right.
Especially when the starting quarterback isn't living up to their expectations. And I think what we learned last week was, yeah, Jarrett Garantano is head and shoulders above the backup options. I mean, like we just talked about, Chattanooga was not good. And Brian Maurer and JT Schrout didn't look good against them. And that's telling. I mean, those guys aren't ready to go and compete at a high level at this point. Will they be capable backups? Sure, potentially. But they're not ready to play at a high level right now. And Jarrett Garantano is. He didn't have a great couple first games, but I was surprised by how quickly the fan base forgot that he was consistent last year for the most part. He was a good game manager last year. And I think he's kind of confessed to it that he's tried to do too much now and needs to reel it back in, just make the plays he can make, which is who Jarrett Garantano is as a quarterback. I don't think he's a guy that's supposed to go out there and win you games with 300-yard, four-touchdown games. He's a guy you need just not to lose you a game. And the first two games, he was doing that. But he's the best quarterback on this team. And I thought what Jeremy Pruitt said about him going out there and just saying, he's our guy. I don't understand this. And again, I don't know where that came from, the media creating that narrative, because that to me was a fan base on Twitter thing. Mm-hmm. I had those mentions too that are, oh, Brian Maurer's the answer. Garantano is not it. And I'm like, how do you know that?
I know.
We saw the guy in a spring game, and he wasn't very good in that game either. So, yeah, it seems obvious to me.
Well, and that was the point that I saw in that game against BYU specifically, is that the arm talent has never been the issue for JG. And I think at this point, the question becomes, how can Jim Chaney make him feel as comfortable as he possibly can in this offense? Because for a guy who's had as many offensive coordinators, as many head coaches as he's had, it seems like he's swimming a little bit and doesn't really know what reads are where and what's kind of going on in the offense. So that begs the question at this point, how does Tennessee make him more comfortable and make it as easy as they can on him in a hostile environment such as the Swamp?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And to me, I think what you said was very true. I looked at those first two games, and to me, I was like, Garantano's head looks like he's swimming right now. He looks like he's thinking the game of football opposed to reading the defense and reacting. And that's not really something we'd seen from him last season. So that was a bit of a surprise. And, you know, we talk about the number of offensive coordinators he's had, having a new one every year, different systems, this, this, and that. And I'm sure that's a challenge, but I think he's better than he's played. And this is now the biggest test he's going to have early in the season. And you know, we go back to Chattanooga again, and this is why that game is so important. It gives a team something to build on and feel good about themselves before going into a hard situation. But to me, the offensive line is starting to settle in a little bit, which is really encouraging for a team that's had a horrible offensive line for the past few seasons. I think if Jameer Johnson can go at left tackle, it makes it an even better unit. But getting the ground game established is going to be important, because Tennessee really hasn't had a steady ground game for the past couple of years, largely because of the offensive line. But if they can get a little bit of a run game going, it'll help. Because Florida's defense, especially against the pass, is really good. I mean, that pass rush, whether Jabari Zuniga can play or not, impacts it. But that pass rush is really good.
At what point does Tennessee start to do more harm than good by changing that rotation every single week and sometimes every other possession at the offensive line? Because it feels like at this point, nobody has the ability to get any traction, get any momentum, I would say, at those spots. And you look back at the BYU game again, and I talked about this on this show last week, right when they put in Riley Locklear and Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright, it was like all of them didn't know how to play the game of football on that opening drive. And it took them a couple possessions to get their feet under them a little bit and find the pace and the tempo of the game. To me, I think it's important for Tennessee to find five they really like and just kind of stick with them at this point. But how far away do you think they are from getting to that point right now?
I think they took a step to being closer to that last week. I think that right side of the line became interesting when Kayron Calvert moved to right tackle and Darnell Wright moved into right guard, because Wright had been playing outside and Calvert had been playing inside, and they flip-flopped those guys and they seem to have some success there. But that seems to be settling a little bit, which I think helps, because that side of the line especially was in flux. I mean, you were seeing Locklear in there, you're seeing Ryan Johnson there, you were seeing Marcus Tatum in there. There's a lot of moving pieces. So I think they're closer to the five. I feel like the five they had last week with Jameer Johnson back is the unit that I think is their best unit. But, you know, Wanya Morris is still going to play. I mean, if the lineup becomes left tackle Jameer Johnson, Trey Smith, Brandon Kennedy, Darnell Wright, Kayron Calvert, I think you're still going to see Wanya Morris play. I think you're still going to see Ryan Johnson play. I mean, they're not going to play just five, but I think they have a better idea of who the five is that they want to play with.
Yeah, and Calvert's an interesting prospect to me, because from what I've seen and read and heard from coaches as well, it seems like a guy who's got the physical ability, but maybe mentally it's not quite there for him. But I think if the game can slow down for him a bit, he's able to pass off rushers that are stunning on him right in front of him coming from different positions. I think that's a guy that could be a really good answer for Tennessee at that right tackle position. It's just so important for them to not have freshman bookend tackles. Yeah, as good as Wright and Morris are, think a guy like Calbert emerging could be a really good sign for Jim Chaney in this offense.
I agree. And finding tackles, I mean, this roster has been very much missing true tackles for the past couple of seasons. I mean, Trey Smith is a very good offensive lineman, but he's a guard. He's not a left tackle like they were playing him as last season, in a little bit his freshman year, too, for that matter. But he is a very good guard, a very good left guard. But you need some tackles on this roster. Jameer Johnson is more of a tackle, not the biggest guy for tackle, but Kayron Calvert looks like an SEC tackle in terms of size. If he can back that up anyway in the athleticism standpoint, which he appeared to do last week, although Florida, Chattanooga, very different. But finding some real tackles, and I do think Darnell Wright is a guy that, like Trey Smith, can go either way, but is better at guard. But Wanya Morris is a tackle, and he's got to be a tackle at some point in his career because Tennessee needs desperately offensive tackles, and they're getting closer to having those guys.
Mike, how should Tennessee fans approach this game on Saturday? Because it seems like Florida always looks vulnerable against Kentucky year in, year out. They did last year in losing to the Wildcats for the first time in what seemed like forever, because it almost was. I don't think either of us were alive the last time before last year that Kentucky beat Florida. But they always just magically figure things out, especially down in the swamp against Tennessee. What expectations should Tennessee fans have going into this game? Because as I look at this Florida team and you break down the matchups on both sides of the football, I don't think that this Florida team is the blueprint of what it will take for Tennessee to get an upset. This does not seem like a good matchup for this Tennessee team that still is having trouble getting lined up on the defensive side of the football.
You know, I'm not overwhelmingly impressed by Florida's offense, and that's kind of been true for recent seasons as well. And, you know, you throw Felipe Franks out of the mix with a season-ending injury, and that changes it even more. Tony being their best offensive weapon, he's kind of up in the air, it seems like, as far as health. I don't think he played last week against Kentucky. Their offense, to me, doesn't wow me, but their defense really does. I think at all three levels, they've got guys, and that's where I think Tennessee is going to struggle in this game. I think Tennessee is going to have decent success defensively against Florida, but I'm really curious how Tennessee is going to move the ball. Even if Jabari Zuniga and T.J. Henderson, who missed last week, don't play, or were hurt in last week's game, rather. If those guys don't play, it changes things. But David Reese is still one of the better linebackers in this conference and had 16 tackles last week. So I really think it's a hard matchup for Tennessee in terms of moving the ball. I mean, this is undoubtedly the best defense they've faced so far, and it's going to be one of the better ones in the conference, it looks like.
More with Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel coming up as you listen to the UT podcast on 104.5 The Zone. But first, I want to tell you more about our friends at Brentwood Hearing Center. You've heard me mention the great work that they do and the work they've been doing for now more than 30 years. You know all about the new Tennessee hands-free law. It makes it illegal for drivers to hold a phone in their hand while operating a vehicle. But if you're familiar with hearing devices, maybe you've looked into it recently, let Brentwood Hearing Center introduce you to the Phonak Marvel, a revolutionary new hearing aid that connects wirelessly to both iPhone and Android devices, and even your television. Listening to this podcast, or your favorite 104.5 podcast, it's now a lot easier when you've got hearing aids that connect via Bluetooth technology to both iPhone and Android devices. If you're challenged to hear in certain situations and remain tempted to reach for the phone in your vehicle, give Brentwood Hearing Center a call, 615-377-0420. Test drive the Phonak Marvel. Brentwood Hearing Center offers five doctors of audiology with more than 85 years of combined experience, led by Ann Bowling and Tanya Williams. You've seen their convenient location right off of I-65 on Franklin Pike at the Brentwood Old Hickory exit. Pay them a visit, 5544 Franklin Pike, Suite 100. Give them a call to hear what sounds you've been missing while hanging out with the kids, sitting in that big meeting at the office, or just singing along with Rocky Top and Neyland Stadium. 615-377-0420. And that website is great. BrentwoodHearingCenter.com. Brentwood Hearing Center. Better hearing, better life. This feels like a game to me where the one or two turnovers that either team is going to get to set their struggling offense up with a short field is going to make all the difference. And Tennessee was able to win that battle at Auburn last year, a similar time of year in a noon matchup that I know a lot of Tennessee fans are drawing parallels to. But the matchup that worries me for Tennessee is the dual quarterback system that Florida's going to run, with Emory Jones being the mobile option and backing up Kyle Trask. It's hardly a Chris Leak, Tim Tebow setup that, that Tennessee fans and Florida fans alike have started to compare it to. But I thought it was interesting, Dan Mullen saying yesterday that Jones is, quote, further along than Tebow would have been in 06. And of course, that's a classic example of a head coach talking up a young quarterback that hasn't played a lot of snaps in college football. But when you factor in just how bad Tennessee looked against the option offense in week one against Georgia State, I see a Florida team coming in here giving Emory Jones 8, 9, 10 carries, and it's only going to take one or two big runs for touchdowns to maybe bury this Tennessee offense against that talented defense that you mentioned.
Yeah, you know, I don't love two quarterback systems, never really have. I mean, I was a student at Michigan State in 2009, I think it was, when Michigan State was splitting reps between Kirk Cousins and a guy named Keith Nichol, who transferred in from Oklahoma. And it just, there's no continuity to that. And I think a lot of people would see it the same. And, you know, you touched on Georgia State and the option. I think that's a big thing. But it also is different when it's your quarterback for the whole game that does those things. Mm. Whereas in Florida, it's going Kyle Trask, Emory Jones. When Emory Jones is in the game, you expect different things, and it, you know, it makes it more obvious. And yeah, the Tebow thing, man, coaches love doing that thing, yeah, where they throw out these comps, throw out these statements, and you just kind of roll your eyes at them to some extent when you're in the media hearing those things, because, you know, it's a wonderful confidence booster trying to give your guys. It's a nice thing to throw out there, but sure. I mean, Emory Jones, maybe in terms of an offensive understanding, might be further along than Tim Tebow because he had an extra year to learn some of the offense. But I mean, come on, like, we're talking about a Heisman guy, a specific generational kind of guy in college football, and they're wildly different players.
Yeah, let's go ahead and just call this our backup quarterback special, because now that we've compared Emory Jones
really
to Tim Tebow and Brian Maurer to Tua Tagovailoa, both awfully long stretches, that's for sure. You know, it is hard to believe that the last time Tennessee and Florida played a noon game was 2003. Vols fans will remember that win over a Ron Zook coach team. There's a name from the past that lots of UT fans would like to have back on the sidelines in the Swamp. A James Banks Hail Mary catch in the end zone as the first half ended. It just feels like it's going to take a little bit of magic in a play like that, not necessarily a Hail Mary, but just something different and odd, you know, the kind of play that Tennessee's been on the wrong side of in the past couple of years, and even 2 weeks ago against BYU. What do you think the chances are that Tennessee can pull off an upset? I'm putting it anywhere from 10 to 15%, and I won't put you on the spot and make you give me a number, but how optimistic should this Tennessee team be against a team that's still, I think, pretty unknown in what Florida is and how good they really are?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we see the number 8 ranking in front of Florida, but that's a byproduct of a high preseason ranking. I mean, they barely beat Miami in week one, barely beat Kentucky last week, Kentucky without its quarterback, obviously, and it's a down Kentucky team, too, for that matter. So it's hard to evaluate what that team is, but that's kind of what early SEC stuff is. You're going to kind of figure that out. I think Tennessee's got a good shot to compete. I'm surprised the spread is 14. I mean, that seems high to me. I feel like Tennessee is within that from this Florida team, but I don't know. Tennessee hasn't gone on the road yet this season. You know, you always have to wonder about how youth will respond. I mean, that's going to matter a lot. Tennessee is playing a lot of inexperience on defense, and they're going into a tough place for the first time. So I don't know. I don't know if I can put a percentage on it necessarily. I think Tennessee is being given less credit than it probably should be going into this game, but Florida is more talented and certainly more experienced.
How big of an impact is just getting Daniel Betuli back on defense make, especially when it comes to the issues with getting lined up defensively and guys being in the wrong spot and not passing off a guy in motion? And how many of these issues for Tennessee defensively are just a lack of talent up front?
Yeah, I think some of the issues do go back to that. I mean, just figuring it out, having guys that haven't played before. I mean, you know, we wonder what Emmett Gooden's difference would have been. Certainly he would have been the guy on this unit. But at the same time, it's just one guy in a unit that has to play 3 to 4 guys up there in the front. And Tennessee just hasn't gotten that consistency from guys that are still learning to play, which is expected. But I've been really intrigued by, you know, the freshman Crouch and Harrison and what they've been able to do They seem to play a lot on third down at specific rush ends, which is an interesting sub-package for Tennessee. But there is a lot of inexperience up there, and I think we've seen some flashes from some of those guys. I think Greg Emerson's got a good future ahead of him, but, you know, for the reality for Tennessee is they need the good future for some of those young guys to be now. I mean, if they want to have a shot to even sniff a bowl game this season, because the defense really has to be better up front.
Mike, do you get the sense that Bryce Thompson can suit up and play some meaningful snaps for Tennessee Saturday?
You know, Jeremy Pruitt played that one close to the vest, and I don't blame him. I think it's hard to know when you're going to play a player who still has an active court date, which Bryce Thompson still does. I feel like it was an understandable move to get Thompson back into practice about 10 days ago, a week ago, 10 days ago, something in that range, just to start getting him used to playing football again after a couple weeks away from it. I don't know if he's going to travel, let alone play. I was very surprised last week that he wasn't even dressed out. I thought once he was back in practice that he would probably play a little bit against Chattanooga to have him ready for Florida. But after not even having him dressed for that game, I really do wonder on what that timeline is and if it's just a matter of, all right, let the legal stuff wrap itself up and be figured out before you put him back on the field, which to me is always smart. But Bryce Thompson is Tennessee's best defensive back, and that's a guy that would make a huge difference on the field whenever they get him back.
One guy that's going to be important for Tennessee offensively, of course, this week and really now at this point in every week, Eric Gray. And I know Ty Chandler has had an excellent couple of weeks. He had that great game against BYU. But Gray passes the eye test. He's got that Alvin Kamara mold. That's a comparison I think does hold up so far for Tennessee. And I think he's got the big play potential that Tennessee can't underestimate at this point, given the fact that they are still dreadful in the red zone with their offense. And the last time Tennessee played in the Swamp, you've got the famed first down and goal from the one that Tennessee then, I believe it was throwing a pick in the end zone. Regardless, they did not score a touchdown after getting first and goal from the one. And you think about some of these big plays that Tennessee's had, a lot of them haven't found the end zone. At what point does Gray become the guy for Tennessee in the backfield? Or do you always just kind of seeing this be a running back by committee room for Jeremy Pruitt's offense?
Yeah, I think any SEC coach is going to say the same thing. You've got to have 2 to 3 running backs going into this league because it's so tough. And Tennessee certainly is going to play at least 2, should play 3, because Ty Chandler and Tim Jordan are good running backs too. I do like the balance between Chandler and Gray. I think Gray is kind of a hybrid between Tim Jordan and his tough running and Ty Chandler's speed. He's a different back than they have. But Ty Chandler, Eric Gray should, I think, see the lion's share of those carries. But Tim Jordan's going to get some too. And you know, I think he's a guy that is good. You know, you're talking about red zone struggle. Tim Jordan's probably the best red zone option they have, just in terms of a muscle runner and a power runner. But yeah, I mean, you're going to see them play those three back throughout the season. There's no doubt about that.
Mike, before I let you go here, I'll throw you a bonus basketball question here. Of course.
Oh, blessing.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I know you'll appreciate this. For the Tennessee fan listening to this, that's going to ask the rhetorical question of, oh, when does basketball start? This is your time. This is your moment. Turn the volume up just a little bit more in your car or wherever you are. What are the reasonable offseason expectations for this team and Rick Barnes in Tennessee? And I know that's a very broad and kind of a question that's got no concrete answer at this point. But with all the unknowns, with all of the change, how excited should Tennessee fans really be for this basketball program that they really just don't know a lot about right now?
You know, a lot of it's going to depend on the waiver for Yurosh Plavcic, just because Tennessee is very young and very new in the post. A lot of freshmen in the post. And, you know, John Fulkerson's the only guy who's really played there, but they need Yurosh to be eligible, I think, to really have a good shot at the NCAA tournament. But, man, I'm personally very excited to see Lamonte Turner this year. I mean, he's a guy that is the alpha on and off the court for this team. And, you know, you look back to last year's team, obviously an incredible historic season for Tennessee, the talent, the personality, very unique in every way. But, you know, I asked Lamonte recently, you know, who was the leader on that team? And, you know, there wasn't one leader. It's just everyone kind of knew what to do and handled business. But now it's Lamonte Turner leading this team. Jordan Bowden right in that mix too, but I mean, Lamonte Turner's got that dog to him, and And I really think he's going to put a stamp on this team and really pull this team along and make it something. So I'm excited to watch that. And I think Tennessee fans should be excited to watch that. One comp I've commonly made, I think, maybe not in terms of how far Tennessee can go this season, but in maybe the brand of team they'll have, is I liken it to what Purdue had last season with Lamonte Turner being a Carson Edwards type, 17, 18 points a game, really take over a team, take over a game kind of guy. I think that potential is there for Lamonte. So I think it's an interesting team, certainly more unknown than last season, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Mike, good stuff as always, man. We appreciate the time, and we will talk to you soon again down the road.
I'm happy to do it.
As we wrap up episode number 10 here, into double digits, baby, on the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast, I want to remind you that we are on multiple different platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher. It's all there on all four. You can also check us out on 1045thezone.com. Make sure you're giving us a five-star review. Tell us why you love the show. Tell us why you love the Big Orange, and we'll make sure to give you some love for that. Next week, previewing our next show, episode number 11 coming up. That'll be next Thursday. We're going to talk Tennessee basketball. Bye week for Tennessee football next Saturday. So instead of getting you ready for a game that, well, won't be happening in Neyland Stadium next Saturday, we're going to preview the Tennessee basketball season. We hope to have a special guest or two lined up to join me here on the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast as we talk Big Orange hoops and the high expectations for Rick Barnes' team heading into the 2019-2020 season. But until then, make sure you're subscribing. Make sure you find us on Zone Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts. Talk to you down the road here from Nashville.
Hello, Tennessee fans. As a four-year member of the Pride of Southland Marching Band, I know all about teamwork, precision, and the importance of good sound. This is Ronnie Bowling at Brentwood Hearing Center. Our doctors of audiology would like to team with you to find the most precise solution to your hearing challenges. Whether it's streaming music, watching television, or even enjoying the halftime show, we don't want you to miss a beat because of your hearing. Give us a call today at 615-377-0420 or learn more at BrentwoodHearingCenter.com.